Hey, Matt Rothschild here, host of the Wisconsin Forward podcast all across the Civic Media Radio Network and at civicmedia.us. For the next several episodes of the Wisconsin Forward podcast, I'm going to be interviewing Democratic candidates for governor. Representative Hong, what has been the response since your announcement?
So I'll admit I'm not actually a huge social media user or, I have folks who help me with that. But to watch our launch video get a million views, to have now, over 700 volunteers who have signed up for our campaign and are volunteering their talents, their time, building a community within other volunteers. And then, folks who are curious. There's not enough curiosity in politics. And so, this working class, foul mouth restaurant worker, current bartender, I think folks are watching to see how a working class candidate who is still considered an outsider, or as my friends like to call me, a wild card. This is, that reception has been really phenomenal, has given me a lot of energy and encouragement.
You mentioned social media. I thought that was you making all those social media videos. I see your social media stuff all over the place.
I have gotten better and more comfortable. It's weird to me to look at a screen and talk to it, but I just remind myself that this is a way to reach many people where they are.
You talked about this being a movement moment. Explain that a little more.
We are seeing all across the country, especially now, people rejecting the status quo, recognizing the harms of the Trump regime, and really struggling with, having their basic needs met because of the rise in the costs of living. And so in order to bring about the change that is really going to center working class people, we need a movement. We need a large coalition of working class people who are in different zip codes, who have different lived experiences, but their central need is to be able to afford where they live, care for themselves, and care for their loved ones. And so to organize all those folks and then help them bring about change and let them know that change is possible, this is what a movement looks like for me.
And that was the Mondami movement in New York City that was so successful. That must have emboldened you.
It was so encouraging to see how working class people came together to believe in a campaign. And again, there may be different lived experiences and even opinions, but the three things that he ran on resonated with folks. And when people are ready for change, they want to do it in community. And I think I was really encouraged that that's what we share. This movement is about building community as well. And so this is what we're learning, is that people are ready for change and they want to make a difference and they want to get involved. And for a campaign to be more of a cause, I think that's what his campaign and my campaign share.
Mm-hmm. And what are the issues that are most important to you in this cause?
Fully funding our public schools, ensuring free and universal childcare. We're an aging state, so elder care and long-term care is incredibly important to ensure every working has fair and good working conditions and can make a living wage. And then ensuring that no one has to pay has to decide between making a paycheck and making rent. And so paid leave for all is another key cornerstone of our campaign.
Yeah, I mean, rent is crazy here in Madison and crazy all across the state, mm-hmm. I imagine. And you've been traveling around the state. I think people, some skeptics would say, well, yeah, Mondami won in New York City. Francesca Hong may be able to win in Madison, but how is she going to play out of Madison? How do you respond to that?
I've been fortunate to be able to travel across the state for the last 5 years in my time in the legislature, whether it's knocking doors for candidates or being invited to speak with communities about issues that really matter to them. And those issues are what is helping to build our movement. Free and universal childcare, fully funded public schools. These are universal issues. And what I always tell folks is that fascism not only aims to divide us and distract us, but it tries to take away our dreams, our vision for a better world. And when we reject this notion that it has to be this way. It encourages folks to think bigger and bolder, and the dire moment of this, you know, how dire this moment is, this is something I'm hearing all across the state, and these conversations are important. And whether it's Poplar, Superior, we went to Grantsburg, Wausau, Stevens Point, headed to Appleton very soon, Blanchardville, Beloit, these every single corner of the state, folks are curious, wanting to talk about change and make a difference in their community, but also really, really stressed. Mm-hmm. And I identify with that stress because I am right now as well, you know, working multiple jobs, trying to do the best for my son as a single mom. And, you know, I work in a stressful job in the state legislature with a very abusive, harmful Republicans who just don't care. And when you have a story or lived experience that you can connect with someone else with, when the candidate is relatable, I think it allows me to open up conversations and encourage people to really see that I'm actively listening and care about what they have to say.
You talk about the economic stress people are living in. You alluded to the political stress we're all living in under Trump and this fascist kind of government. It's not enough just to be anti-Trump, though. I mean, Kamala Harris learned that. We all learned that in the last presidential election. But how would you, as governor, deal with Trump as president? I mean, when he brings ICE in, when he does all sorts of threatening things, as he did to Governor Evers, when Governor Evers just said he was going to let everybody in state agencies know how to respond if ICE comes knocking on the door. I mean, this is a challenge.
It's the responsibility of the executive to protect all of the communities in the state. And whether that is through executive action, whether that is through, you know, arresting ICE agents. And one of the most important things is to ensure that local communities have what they need to keep each other safe. We're seeing, you know, in Chicago, people come together, whether it's trainings, whether it's literally putting their bodies on the line, you know, using community organizing strategies to make sure that everyone understands the, you know, the urgency, how important it is to keep all of our neighbors safe. And so ensuring local communities have what they need, standing up to the regime by, you know, the governor has the largest megaphone in the state, and when you make it clear that we are standing up to this fascism, that we are prioritizing Wisconsinites and protecting them first and using every mechanism that we can, it sets the tone and allows communities to know that their governor is on their side.
And what? How would you react as governor if, say, Trump wants to bring the National Guard out either in Wisconsin or sending them to Portland, Oregon, for God's sakes?
We heard Nancy Pelosi say she's willing to arrest ICE agents. And I think that while, you know, I have differing opinions about how to utilize law enforcement, I think that that would require ensuring that local governments have what they need to make sure they have can protect their communities. And again, looking at every option possible and fighting just kind of on the back end to prevent them from coming here. And it's, we know we're a target because we have sanctuary cities and we have people who are actively working to give each other resources and keep their communities safe. But again, the executive has to use every, you know, every, what is, everything that is available to them to ensure that whether it's the National Guard, whether it's ICE agents, that we are exploring every legal tactic. And then again, I'm willing to put my body on the line, too.
There are some sheriffs, a few counties in Wisconsin that are playing ball with ICE. As governor, how would you respond to that?
Well, I was really proud to introduce the Keep Families Together legislative package, and it would prohibit cooperation with ICE, including 287G agreements, ensuring that if there are families who need legal resources to ensure that they can have, you know, they can use these legal resources to protect themselves, ensuring that ICE agents have to have proper identification, can't be cowardly and wear masks. And so this type of legislation, especially if we have the Democratic trifecta, I would push for the legislators to ensure that these laws pass.
If we don't have that Democratic trifecta, how would you deal with what you call the abusive Republicans? And I saw them being abusive when I would go in there and testify when I was at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Not so much abusive of me, but just totally dismissive of their Democratic colleagues, both procedurally and personality-wise.
My first priority is to ensure that every Wisconsinite has basic needs met and can live a life of dignity, have opportunity, and economic security. And if Republicans are interested in working with me on that, I am going to hear them out and make sure that they are at the decision-making table. I think with a Democratic majority in either house, which I believe that is going to happen in the Senate, there is going to need to be negotiations and compromise on the part of Republicans as well. If they care at all about keeping their seats, they're going to need to deliver for communities. That, I hope, is going to be one thing that we share, is that we know communities deserve better, and we have to enact universal policies to make sure they improve their lives. And that's the expectation I'm going to set for the legislature.
And can you set an example of how you've worked with Republicans in the legislature?
I've passed legislation with Republicans, the Asian American Education Bill, that would require Asian history and talk about lived experiences that would need to be in every K-12 classroom in public schools. And so this was a bipartisan bill that the governor signed a couple years ago. And, you know, it showed that they are still capable, and even the foul-mouthed lefty from Madison is capable of working with Republicans to pass legislation that is meaningful to communities and especially takes care of our kids.
You mentioned foul mouth. I know some reporters, when they're reporting on your campaign, cite that as a fact. It is a fact. Is it for people under 40 or under 50, it may not ring in their ears as such a clang, but for some of us over 50, not me, you should hear me on the tennis court, but there are those who do not like to hear swear words. Do you think do you risk turning people off by that?
I think one of the mistakes that Democrats made is that we are not making an emotional appeal. Folks are angry right now. People are stressed. People are depressed and sad. And I think if politicians do not show how passionate they are about how they feel about the current circumstances and what's going on in the world, it makes us less relatable, and it doesn't give voters, they have to see us as humans too and part of their communities. I think that is what helps make an effective legislator. And so this is how I talk. I came up through restaurant kitchens. I work in politics. Swearing is part of the everyday conversation for me. And so being myself, but also showing that I am passionate and emotional about this moment as well, I think shows an authenticity that many voters identify with.
Yeah. Anyone who's watched any episodes of The Bear know that there's a lot of swearing going on there.
And, I will say that, folks who were talking about decorum in the past and gave me, some candid, unsolicited advice about my language, they are now in a place where they're swearing. The governor is swearing. Mm-hmm. I think, again, it speaks to the urgency of this moment, and people want to see their politicians fight for them, and they want people to be authentic about it.
And share the outrage. A friend of mine has a bumper sticker on her car for Bernie, because, and then it says, F this BS. And I laughed when I saw it. I mean, Bernie's not running right now, but that's the kind of mm-hmm. attitude that you're tapping into a little bit.
Yes, and again, I think that authenticity piece where, being an elected official was not in my plan. I wanted to be a small business owner to create a community space and nourish folks, care for folks. That's what being in the service industry means to me. And I bring those lived experiences to the legislature, but you know, that my lived experiences, my background, the fact that I am going to swear because this is how I talk, I think that relatability, again, that authenticity is something that folks are curious about and oftentimes support, because look at where we are.
Yeah. You identify as a Democratic Socialist. You're one of three or four members of the Socialist Caucus in the legislature. How do you define Democratic Socialism?
Democracy and society. This is about democratizing elements of the economy to ensure that there is fairness, that there is care, that everyone has their basic needs met in housing, education, food, and this is common sense for many folks, and regardless of labels, it is the issues first, and again, so central to democracy, because whether it's participation or who the government serves, how power is used, who power answers to, when we talk about who should have power, it should be the people, and the way for the people to have power when they have their basic needs met, when they're able to participate. Democratizing that economy and how we run government is something that makes sense for a lot of people when I bring it back to the issues about democracy, society, and workers.
But you're not talking about taking over businesses. You're running your own small business.
You know, small business and workers, labor came together as an alliance to fight mega corporations, and holding people accountable, recognize who is the villain here, and it's the folks who are gaming the system, not paying their fair share of taxes, making it so that a system only works for them. Democratic socialism is how we move towards an antidote for that system so that more people have power.
And it may be more popular than some people think. I'm just anecdotally, remember, Mondami Wins, a right-wing friend of mine on Facebook says, oh my God, here comes socialism in New York. And then another friend of mine who I didn't know was very political and may not be very political responded to him saying, look, capitalism isn't working for me and my family hasn't been since the crash of 2008. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. I mean, we talked about housing. You know, rent is just ridiculous. People are spending 30, 40, 50% of their income on rent here in Dane County and in many places in Wisconsin. What would you do about the rent issue, the housing issue, the ability to buy a house if you're a young person, which seems just out of reach?
Housing is a catastrophe right now here in Wisconsin and across the country. And so it's going to require a multifaceted approach. And I think one of the ways that we can best do that here in Wisconsin is actually to make it easier to build affordable housing. There's a lot of things that the state controls that make it harder to for local communities to build. And I think the other thing is this goes back to the unfairness of how the system is rigged. Talk to folks in small communities right outside of Rhinelander, and corporations coming in, buying housing, jacking up prices, and making it harder for the folks who live there, have been there, to be able to afford rent. There has to be additional regulations and protections for communities to make sure that folks can't come in and make it harder for Wisconsinites right now who are working hard, who are trying to make a living, deal with rising costs. They absolutely deserve affordable housing to be able to make their rent and not have it take up so much of their income.
A lot of it, you know, hedge funds buying up half of Milwaukee practically. You know, they're out in California. They don't live here. They're absentee landlords, and they're just buying it out in a speculative boom. It is outrageous.
Enforcement and accountability. You know, Republicans talk about that all the time, but they select who that applies to, and it has to apply to the folks who are actually coming in and making it harder for working class people to live their lives.
You know, I've been reading this book that Ezra Klein co-wrote on abundance, and he talked about making housing more affordable and the bureaucratic problems that stand in the way sometimes of liberal governments making things happen. His biggest example was high-speed rail that never got anywhere in California. Of course, we could have had high-speed rail in Wisconsin if it weren't for Scott Walker.
This is such a trigger.
So I just wonder what's your reaction to that? How would you cut through some of that red tape to make it easier to build affordable housing?
We're a local control state. And I think each community understands better than the state, you know, having a one-size-fit-all, what sort of housing that their communities are demanding and need. And so, again, ensuring that the state isn't acting as an actor that's going to make it harder for new zoning, where we have to invest in certain parts of the community, allowing the local government to be able to make those decisions. But the other piece of this is enforcement. And, you know, I know that regulation can be a hard word for folks, but I think it's about accountability to the mega corporations and, you know, private equity that's coming in and taking advantage of our communities. And when we put it in that frame of we want to hold the folks who are responsible for bringing harm and making it harder for us to live a living, for us to have a living and have the freedom to be able to live where we want it. That enforcement piece is, you know, the responsibility of the state, and one of the ways that we can make it, you know, harder for folks who are trying to build and make it more expensive for communities, and let folks know that it does not have to be this way, but it's going to be a challenge, and it's going to be happen multifaceted. But there's a diverse coalition who want more affordable housing, from the realtors to unions to everyday folks in Wisconsin. And so we have to come together to get it done.
An issue I worked a lot on at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign was gerrymandering. How do we get a final solution to this so no party, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, can gerrymander? I was against even California gerrymandering here this last time. If gerrymandering's wrong, I don't think anyone should do it.
Pass legislation for permanent fair maps. The legislation is drafted. It's been it's starting to get circulated. We need Republicans and Democrats to support this, because you're absolutely right that gerrymandering is harmful to democracy. And we can look at models like Iowa, where there is a commission that is nonpartisan. I don't think elected officials should be on that commission to help draw maps. But the legislation is there, and we need every legislator to support it, and I'd be a governor to sign that into law.
And then what about another issue? I worked on money and politics. Walker totally destroyed our campaign finance law and made the sky the limit on how much rich people can throw into our system, as we saw with the Elines and Diane Hendricks and Elon Musk, for that matter.
Don't forget John Menard.
Yeah, and Menard the folks at Quick Trip, too. So, I mean, there's a lot of right-wing money that throws its weight around here in this state.
Money in politics, corporate money in politics, big money in politics is all disgusting. And also what it does, it makes it harder for working class candidates to run for office, because they're going to be competing in either party with, you know, who can raise the most money. And so not only is it anti-democratic, but I think it makes it so that we don't have the representation that a lot of communities would benefit from, because we've got folks who have those lived experiences and understand what it's like to be a working class person and to struggle and to be, you know, I want more moms and educators and union workers to be able to represent us in government. We absolutely need to reinstate in the state, you know, the ways for government to prevent big money from coming in. And I think there's also ways that we can help people who are running for office and need additional support. You know, Congress and at the federal level, folks can have ways that they can use campaign money to help with cost of living, but we can't do that here in Wisconsin. So that's another piece of legislation that I'd want to explore.
And so how are you funding your campaign? You're a working class candidate.
I'm not taking any corporate money or APAC money. This is a grassroots people-powered campaign, and I'm actually proud of the fact that we are keeping our donation average low, but we've got the most donors of other campaigns of you know, of my opponents right now. I think I can confidently say that. And that's what's going to continue to do when you have more people who want to give, regardless of what they can, because they want to be a part of your campaign, believe in you, and a part of a movement. Or maybe they're just curious. I think that's more democratic. And this is, we have to consider as well that even if, you know, the maximum amount we may receive, it's going to be people right now, especially where there's so many other needs, you know, whether it's giving to organizations that are combating food insecurity, yeah. whether it's making sure that we're giving to, you know, there's so many nonprofits who do great work who have had their funding decimated. We're also going to make sure that where we can provide, you know, those, you know, we can help the community by making donations ourselves as a campaign. And that helps us build relationships, but it's also the right thing to do.
There's been a lot of analysis after the elections, not just with Mondami, but with Spanberger and Virginia and Cheryl in New Jersey. You know, do you go left or do you go pragmatic in the middle? And, you know, the Washington Post and all these pundits are saying, no, just go in the middle. How do you assess that?
I think Spanberger came out right away and showed that she would be complicit. And this, I understand this big tent notion, but we have to appeal to working class people right now. And the dialogue and how folks talk about it might be different for different parts of the country, but sticking to the issues, repelling elitism, making it so that, you know, knowing that when we have legislation that benefits all working class people, all people benefit, you know, rising tides lifts all boats. So while I personally am very skeptical about moving towards supporting moderate candidates, I think that, you know, we have to do everything right now to ensure that we can fight fascism and defeat fascism. But I worry that if we go back to campaigning the way that, you know, is out of fear, that we're going to continue to lose folks. And right now, we've shown that Democrats can, they can be the party of unforced error sometimes with, so that we need candidates that are not going to capitulate to the status quo and choose, you know, political courage over political expediency. And I'm not sure that's always the moderate candidate. Mm-hmm. And so we have to be very careful about that.
You know, Wisconsin has this great progressive tradition going back to Fighting Bob La Follette and the progressive populists of the late 19th century.
Social Security was born here. Yeah. Sewer socialism was born right. here.
Milwaukee has had a history of socialist mayors. So to some extent, the terrain here is familiar to mm-hmm. a lot of people in Wisconsin, not just those who identify as Democratic Socialists. But it's not a scare thing when you see, you know, La Follette schools, La Follette streets all over the state of Wisconsin. And if you're in Milwaukee, where socialism has made, you know, the lakefront, you know, a public place rather than a privatized place, people understand that sewer socialism can work. Are you getting people who, you know, haven't identified Democrat, Republican, left, right, but are... you're resonating with that old progressive tradition when you're traveling around the state?
I get so excited when I meet folks at, you know, the different community events that we're at who are independents, who say they're socialists, who say they don't identify with any party right now. You know, folks who have been diehard, lifelong Democrats volunteering for the Democrats. These are all folks that we've met at individual events, and that's really exciting. That means that regardless of where you are on the political spectrum, you're ready for change, and people are pissed. People are stressed. They know that the system is working against them and that we have a fascist regime that continues to bring on harm and chaos. So one of the ways I talk to folks about how important then it is to have a state government that is bold and unafraid to not just fight the fascist regime, but make sure that communities have what they need, because Trump is going to continue to tank the economy and make it harder for folks to just live and survive. He is, you know, this is a Republican Party and a regime that doesn't care about starving folks and are willing to starve children, that doesn't care about ripping away people's health care. I mean, millions are going to die if they don't have access to health care through the Affordable Care Act. And so we have to look at ourselves as a state to meet the urgency of the moment and make sure that we are acting as swiftly as possible to get health care to folks, to get child care to folks, to get education to folks, and living wages, which is why we have to talk about universal policies and set that as the expectation for the legislature.
There is a level of sadism in this Trump regime, both in policies domestically and then, you know, cutting off aid, foreign aid that's killed, you know, 500,000, 600,000 people by some tabulations already. And the man is just totally, and his people are just totally lacking in basic human empathy. So I do think you're striking a contrast that's really important there. Is there anything I haven't asked you yet that you want to mention?
I'm a community organizer, so I always have to leave folks with an action item. And I think that while I would appreciate any support to our campaign, there is so many communities that are doing like hyper local community organizing. Folks showing up for, you know, providing meals for their neighbors, food drives, making sure people are giving cash to food pantries. And I would implore folks to know that that mutual aid that's happening in your individual community is another form of resistance. So look at who's doing that work, where you can support in the organization, and whether it's your time, whether it's giving money, whether it's just making sure that more folks, that you're able to amplify the good work of organizations in your communities, it's one of the ways that we can continue to fight together.
And if people want to support your campaign, Representative Hong, how do they do that?
They can go to FrancescaHong.com. I'm on all the social media sites, I think, at FrancescaHongWI.
Well, thanks so much for being my guest today on the Wisconsin Forward Podcast. It's great to see you.
Good to see you, too. Happy to be here.
Good luck on the trail.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's going to have to be it for this episode of the Wisconsin Forward Podcast on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Matt Rothschild. I want to thank you for listening. I also want to thank my engineer and producer, Dom Lee, who's always great to work with. And I want to thank Sage Weil of Civic Media for giving me this platform. I'll be back in just a day or two with another Democratic candidate for governor, so stay tuned for that.